Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, race fans. How the hell are you? Another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. I am one of many people that make all of this possible. Mr. CJ Sports, producer of the show, be hanging out with your host, Chris Yellowcoffer Flag Crane. His co-host, Greg Moore. Of course, Mike is in the background, as he's already called in. And we're going to be blessed with the opportunity to have Chris and Nicole Travis on the show tonight. So very, very excited about that. I know there's been a lot of attention over on the fan page, a lot of attention in the whole One Fan Nation period with this wonderful guest tonight. So very excited to be able to sit back tonight as there's 20,000 things going on here as I am moving this weekend. So it's been it today and the next 2 days moving. So get an opportunity to listen in and let Chris and Craig do their thing tonight. But before we jump into that real quick, I got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life. You have to find them on Facebook, Fit for Life, or you go to our site, www.the110nationsports.com. Find the location near you, 24/7, 365. Get your gym on, clean facility, courtesy staff, everything you possibly need or want. That is Fit for Life. Also got to thank the I-95 Sports Network and Mile High Radio for rebroadcast or syndicating our shows. Without these great marketing partners and or networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I got to thank all of them that are involved. You can find us on Twitter, at 110 Nation. You can find us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. And, of course, you can find our site over at www.110nationsports.com. Y'all didn't come in or tune in tonight to listen to me talk. We get enough of that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm going to jump out of the studio. Obviously, y'all tuned in to listen the chances of somebody actually tuning in tonight to listen to me, I think it goes something like, No chance in hell. That's what we got. Anyway, we'll get Craig and Chris in the studio. Get you guys ready with their guest tonight. And Chris, how you doing tonight?
Hey, man, how the heck are y'all? This is Chris, the other caution plate, Creighton. Glad to have y'all for another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. I have come off the mute button, haven't I? There, Mr. CJ Sports. Am I actually live this time?
Yeah, you are live. Craig is in the studio, and all you can do is let me know, and your wonderful guest is already called in and ready to go. So you got all you got everything in your fingertips. Just let me know.
All right, good deal. Well, glad to have y'all a part of Racing with Big Sweat here tonight, and hopefully y'all listen in to the live feed. If anybody's out there listening to the live feed on Facebook, make sure that y'all share that for us, please. Get that shared around as much as possible. I tell you what, leading up to this show, I don't normally feel nervous. I don't normally get the jitters or anything like that. But, man, this is just such an exciting show and seen a lot of response to this young lady who's going to be on the air with us tonight, 21-year-old Miss Krista Travis. Without further ado, let's bring on the star of the show, and that's Miss Travis. How you doing tonight? Are you there?
Hold on, Chris, I might have put the wrong one. Is might hit the wrong one. There you go.
I hear some giggling. There you go.
There you go. Hey, Chris, you got through the night without any technical difficulties. I had to fill in.
Well, you know, I think I thought about this about 2 seconds before the show started. I normally get the last four digits of the number, and I don't think I passed that to you. But we're going to rock and roll on through the rest of this show. It's such a pleasure tonight to have on Miss Krista Nicole Travis. Miss Travis, without further ado, please introduce yourself.
My name's Krista Nicole Travis. I'm 21 years old. I'm from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I drive a Neesmith street stock, and I also drive a pier stock on asphalt at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway.
Wow. Now, that's a full hands job right there. You're driving two different race cars. We're going to jump right into this. I mean, you're driving a dirt car and a pier street asphalt car. That's night and day, right? It's not easy to jump from a dirt car to an asphalt car, is it? There's not much to carry over or what?
Oh, no, sir. They're totally different. It's, it's definitely hard to adjust going back and forth between them two. But one thing I have noticed this season is driving both of them, they have both helped me racing each track, dirt and asphalt. So it's helped my racing tremendously, racing both dirt and asphalt.
It's interesting that you say that because they always say seat time is the most valuable time in a race car. And I guess you can attest to that, right?
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely.
Yeah, and so you've been racing for quite a while. You come from a family of racing. Tell us about getting your feet wet in the Cajun Mini Stock Series, and when did you know that you were going to be a race car driver?
Well, I've been around racing my whole life. My dad, he's raced ever since I was a baby. My uncles, they raced. My mom, she raced growing up. My brothers, my cousins. So every Saturday night was spent at the dirt track, and I'm also at the asphalt track. So ever since I was a little girl, I knew that was what I was wanting to get into when I got older. And at Duck River, they had a rookie class. When you turned 12, you could start racing. So whenever my 12th birthday started creeping up, I started hounding my dad to buy me a pure pony car. And it actually took me 4 years to convince him. I was 16 when I started racing the rookie class, which was a pure pony class, and it's been nonstop ever since.
So it started with the mini stocks, and you made your way up to the street stock class. Tell us about that first race and that extra horsepower that you had. Or is it really? I mean, mini stocks go fast these days. It was still a cultural shock, right? Once you got into the street stock.
Oh yes, sir, definitely. Especially jumping from my regular pure pony car to my KMSA car. That was, you know, a pretty big jump. But then jumped in from my KMSA car to that street stock car. Oh, it was definitely an adrenaline rush, and I was like, I'm never going back to a four-cylinder car again.
Done with the little horsepower, in with the big horsepower. Now,
yes, sir.
Your father obviously was in racing. Tell us about growing up and how racing just become part of life.
Racing, you know, it wasn't just something we did on the weekend. It was a lifestyle for us. You know, during the week, I grew up playing fast pitch softball, so I'd have my games and practice during the week, and then after that, we'd head on down to the race shop, and we'd help my dad work on the car. So it wasn't just a Saturday night thing for us. It was a Sunday through Saturday night, you know. It was just a way of life for us, and it still is, and it's just, you know, we wouldn't want it any other way.
And so tell us about this year. Tell us about how the season's going and all.
This year, I haven't ran too much dirt. We focus really on Nashville at the fairgrounds. It was my first season down there. I drove the pure stock class, and we had 8 races down there. We ended up, every time we raced down there, we had a top 10 finish, and we ended up 5th in points down there, and we came shy of rookie of the year by, I think it was 20 or so points. But we had a really good year down at the fairgrounds. We finished every race. No bad luck down there, knock on wood. So we did that, and then we raced on dirt a few times. I know we went to the Ice Bowl in January. We didn't make the show then. But then we came back to Winterfest, and we had a pretty good run there at Winchester Speedway. It's one of our hometown tracks. And by that time, Nashville had started up. And then here recently, we went to Street Stock Nationals at Why Not back in August, had a good time down there. We didn't make the show, but we had a pretty good run. And then we went to Talladega this past weekend, and we finished 7th on Friday night. And then Saturday night, we pulled out a top 5 finish, so we finished 5th.
You know, traveling has become a big interest in racers these days, and it really helps you build your experience and a lot of tracks don't necessarily race every weekend anymore. Tell us about the experience of being able to travel around and what comes with the setups of the cars.
Traveling around, I think, with back to the KMSA part, I remember we went to at least, goodness, it was 10 different tracks, I think, in the season. It was, I believe, like 6 different states that year. And that tremendously helped my driving because you don't just get accustomed to driving one track. You have to learn how to drive a car in, you know, how to set up the car, the handle on this track, and what to do, and that helped my racing out a lot. And I think that's what helped me to this day is traveling, and that's why I like to travel. And the asphalt and dirt has helped me a lot too. Like I said earlier, it's just the different tracks help, I feel like.
So you've been racing for about 4 or 5 years. Tell us about the memory that sticks out the most, that one night that you'll always cherish so far.
Oh, I would have to say my first win. That was my first win. It was in Rookie Pony, and that was a night to remember. I remember we had a clean sweep that night. We won the heat race and the feature, and I'll never forget coming off the track and seeing the smile on my mama and daddy's face, and that picture still plays in my head almost every time I get in the race car. Just that's my goal, just getting out there and having fun and being safe. And, you know, you want that win, and you want to get out and leap off that track and just see my parents smile, you know, whenever you win. So that was definitely one of my favorite memories, is my first win in Pure Pony.
So it's definitely about the wins in the Travis family.
Mm-hmm. And the memories, and the family.
And the memories, too. So does Dad help on the car? Tell us about the family unit that helps support where you're at.
Yeah, so my parents, they play a huge part into my racing. Me and my dad, you know, we're the ones who mainly work on the car. My mom, she's always down there with us. So my dad, I call him my crew chief, and then we have our crew chief, his name's Jeremiah. And then we have, you know, our family and friends who pitch in whenever they can, and we appreciate that. But mainly it's just a family thing, you know. Whenever we go to the track, it's our family and our friends, and we just go to have a good time. But, you know, mainly it's just me and my dad and my mom and Crew Chief Jr., my brother, whenever he gets a chance to come if he's not working.
And you work a full-time job as well, right? Tell us a little bit about the real life that you have.
Yes, I do. I work in the medical field. I'm a certified phlebotomist, which, if you don't know, that's where I take people's blood. They call us vampires.
Wow.
But I'm also
Halloween.
But I'm also the office manager at where I work too. So phlebotomist and an office manager during the day, and then a race car driver during the night on the weekends.
Kind of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Go ahead, Craig Moore.
Well, Travis, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I got to say that actually I was getting ready to touch on your daytime job. But out of the two, if you had a choice, what would you – if you had to give up one at 21 years old, to do the other, which would it be?
Between working my job or racing?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely my job. I would quit that in a heartbeat. We'd go racing.
Hey, don't you
want to
call it silly? Come on, Craig. I mean, seriously.
Well, I figured you were asking all the Chris Matthews hardball questions. I'd throw in a really nice softball.
That's the way. We're starting Craig out. Craig's been a great addition to our show. Unfortunately, I'm not Big Sweat. As a matter of fact, I shared the airlines with a great guy. He was my crew chief of the radio, Mr. Steve Billmeyer. He passed away on us back in March. Well, I guess it was February. And so Craig's come along, and we've kept the show going, and so I'm actually caution flagging. That's Craig Moore and the producers, Mr. CJ Sports. And welcome to the 110 Racing family. We do the show a lot, and they have some other shows as well, so we appreciate all the likes that your fans have given us this week as we announced your appearance here on the show. So tell us about the future. Yeah, I mean, tell us what you got planned for next year, and do you have any more racing for this year?
This year we're done for the season. We're currently starting building my new chassis for next year. We got a brand new doghouse we're putting together. It's a street stock. For 2018, our plans so far are we're going to, of course, be at the Ice Bowl in January at Talladega. We're going to plan on running the big Mid-South Big 8 series. We're going to travel to a lot of the big races. as far as Nashville goes, that's still to be announced. So we're not 100% for sure what we're going to do there yet. So we're still trying to figure that out. But as far as dirt goes, we're planning on having a pretty busy season with that. So we're just going to kind of wait and see how the schedules conflict with the Mid-South Big Eight and all the other big races for the Nashville season.
Yeah, that sounds like a busy schedule. Tell us how the opportunity come about to get into an asphalt car. You know, you went through the ranks of dirt track racing. I figure dirt track racing is probably where your roots are. How'd the opportunity come out for you to be in a pure stock street stock late model asphalt car? There you go.
Well, you know, I grew up around dirt racing, but then too. Also grew up around asphalt. You know, my dad, he drove down at the fairgrounds. My uncle Alan Carter, he drives. My uncle James, my uncle Tommy Clymer. You know, we grew up around Nashville as well, but dirt was mainly it. So I've always had that asphalt kick in me. And in the past couple of years, I kept saying something to my dad about, I really want to try asphalt. I really want to try asphalt. And then a deal came by about an asphalt pure stock car being up for sale, and He couldn't pass it by, so he said, well, we're going to try asphalt racing, and we took it, and he ran with it, and it actually worked out pretty good because one of our sponsors, Dell Holmes, he has Legend cars, and he got to my dad. He drove a Legends down at the fairgrounds for a season, and I actually got to drive a Legends down at the fairgrounds for a race, and that was pretty exciting too, so...
Now, tell us where the number come from. I've seen the 04. Is there a special meaning behind that?
The 04 came from my dad. He always ran 04, so growing up, whenever I was a little girl, always said if I got a race car, I would run 04. So I just added my little personal touch to it, and I added a K to it. And it kind of is funny because my birthday is December the 4th, and it's 04. So kind of plays back to my birthday, too. So from my dad and my birthday, and so it's kind of like a family thing.
Oh, goodness gracious, guys, I was still on mute. Are y'all there?
No, I'm sorry. I was on
YouTube. Wow. I had the whole question. I was like, yeah, so tell us about the experience with running with the big dogs and like the Street Stock Nationals and the my goodness, I can't believe we dropped the ball that way. But you had to miss the Duck River Mid-South Big Eight race at the Deep Fried 75, but you've gotten to run against some pretty heavy hitters in this Neesmith series. Tell us about some things that you've learned.
Oh, yes, sir. You know, I enjoy getting to run with the big heavy hitters whenever we get to run the big, you know, Neesmith races, and, you know, we're really looking forward to the Mid-South Big Eight races. You know, it's nice to get to see all the drivers come up from Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama. You get to talk with the drivers, and a lot of them are very helpful. And even though, you know, with me being a girl driver, sometimes guys, they're not so approving, but, you know, I've never come across an issue. All the drivers have been more than welcoming and more than helpful to me. They're, you know, they always give me tips and always trying to help improve my car. My dad, you know, me and my dad, and just, you know, they've been nothing but, you know, welcoming and a big help to us, and, you know, we really appreciate that.
Yeah. Do guys seem to race you different because you're a female? Or when you put on that helmet, you're just one of the guys, but is that necessarily always the truth when you're racing?
You know, here lately, I feel like I get treated like a driver, and, you know, that's all I've wanted my whole racing career. But when I first started, you know, back a few years ago, some of the guys, they didn't like the idea of a girl being out there with them. So they would try to run over me or, you know, take me out, and they just wasn't too happy about it. If we beat them, they wanted to try to accuse us of cheating. But, you know, here lately, I feel like the days are changing, and there's more women getting into the sport, which is awesome. And, you know,
oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
Drivers, so, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly
awesome.
What, you know, we have Natalie Decker that comes on, the 110 Nation, big-time fan. And, of course, you know, she's a female driver as well. And it kind of echoes what she says there, that, you know, that the opportunity is there and the culture has changed. And to hear that from you, it's very nice to know.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. I'm happy to see that because a few years ago I was kind of iffy about it. I didn't know how it was going to play out. But, you know, over the years it's definitely been a great change, and I'm very pleased with how it is.
Do you think that the change has been more of a youth change and racers, the old race fans have kind of accepted the youth movement, that younger people are in the car now, and that's kind of helped pave the way for the new racing that we have? Because it's definitely, when you put on your helmet and you put on your fire suit, you have just as much ability as anybody else.
Yes, I believe so. I believe that, you know, they kind of look to us, you know, not just myself, but us younger drivers as the future of the sport. And, you know, I have little cousins who race, and they are the future of the sport. And I think it's great seeing the younger kids getting out there and getting to race, because that's what, you know, our sport is going to run off of here, you know, in 10 to 15 years, it's going to be them. So I think we need to encourage them and support them as much as we can and pave the way for them. That way they can keep racing.
Yes,
definitely.
Go ahead, Craig.
I must say, Krista, you are very well spoken. I was listening to what you said about paving the way, and to me that's phenomenal. We have a lot of young kids up in my neck of the woods that start out in go-karts, and then they move up to what we call slingshots, and then they go to four cylinders, and then they move up. And you see that with the young people here too, the older, more experienced drivers, they're helping out these young kids to show them, hey, this is what needs to be done, and that's what needs to be done for the sport in order for it to grow. Because if it doesn't, then it just becomes stagnant. Tell us about your runs. Tell us about your runs at Dega, 7th and 5th. I'm not real familiar with you, but tell us a little bit about those and where you started and things like that in a race.
Friday night we started, in the heat race we started on the last row. I believe we started 6th, and I believe we came up to, it was either 4th or 5th. So that put us starting, I have to do math. I think we, two, four, six. We started about, 7th or 8th in the feature, and we came up to 7th. We, in the feature on Friday night, we kind of got loose a little bit and made a couple of mistakes coming off at turn 4, and I got passed by a couple of cars, and it took me a couple laps, but we got it. I got the car gathered back together, and we got them passed back, and we ended up finished 7th. And then on Saturday night, the same thing in a heat race. We started on the dead last row in the first one, and we started on the inside row, though, and so that put us starting about the same position in the feature, and we made our way up to 5th. We had a pretty good running car. It was still a little loose coming off. We didn't have too much traction, but we held on to 5th and had a pretty good run. Talladega is one of my favorite tracks to drive at. So it was nice to be able to go there and run and have pretty good runs there. It got me pumped up more for the Ice Bowl coming up in January.
Yes, the Ice Bowl. That's a big-time event. Craig Moore, he's from up in the New York area. Some of the drivers from his area is like Stuart Friesen and a few others. Of course, it's, you know, just as deep in the dirt track in up north as it is here in the south. And Craig always acknowledges the fact that southern drivers, especially the young kids, have so much respect and all the yes mans and yes sirs and stuff that we hear from the youth. You guys are in a great position to carry dirt track racing to where it is and to change the persona of what a dirt track racer is. Are you involved in any way with your community and all? How do you share your passion for racing with people?
At work, I try to share it as much as I can with, it's funny because I have a couple of patients, they're from down in, you know, Mississippi area and stuff, and they still come into work, you know, they come in every so often, and they'll be, ask me how my racing's doing, and before then, I used to work in the school system with the kids in the after-school program, and I would try to incorporate my racing with them as much as I could, tell them about it, you know, show them videos, get them excited, and you know, I try to always get people to come out, you know, hey, come out to our local track, watch us race this week. And, you know, sometimes people will, sometimes people won't. Just depends on the type of person they are, if they like to go out and try something new. I've had a couple of my coworkers actually come watch me race. I also play slow pitch softball also during the week, co-ed. And I've had a couple of my teammates who've never been to the races before come out and watch me. And now they're hooked on it and excited for the next close race where they can come watch. So I try to share my love with racing with everyone. If you know me, then you know that racing is what I do and it's what I love. And I just try to share that with everyone just to get them out on a Saturday night and enjoy what I do.
Where do you find time, young lady, to do all that you do?
It's very hard.
I'm tired just listening to you.
I don't get that much sleep.
And on top of that, Craig, her home track actually, well, the track that's closest closed down, but she travels about 45 minutes to go to Duck River. How far is Nashville?
Nashville is about, it takes us only 30 to 35, 40 minutes to get there. It's not too bad of a drive.
Sounds like she's in prime country to hit some great dirt tracks and great tracks around her area. Krista, who did you grow up? Who was your favorite driver when you were growing up?
Oh, hands down, I'll have to be my daddy. He was he's one of my favorite drivers still to this day. I always try to get him to get back into racing, and you know he. Whenever he gets in a car, I just love watching him race. And, you know, to this day, he's given up so much of his racing so I can race and so that, you know, we can make my racing, you know, be the best that it can be. And that just takes, a really great person to be able to do that, especially, you know, with the love of racing. Once you're in it, you're in it. You know, to give your racing up for someone, that just shows how much you love someone. And so he's definitely my favorite driver, hands down.
So what you're telling me is he's your hero because he was the one that let you drive first.
Yep.
Tell us about when can you remember the first time he let you get in and kind of simulate or maybe drive it around the yard? Tell us about that real quick.
It's funny. The first time that I ever drove my first race car was the night before I was supposed to race, and I did not know how to drive a stick shift. So we were in our race car shop parking lot, and I remember he crawled in on the passenger side, and he put in a table chair in there to sit, and I was driving, and we was just fingers crossed hoping I could get driving that stick shift down because we were due to race tomorrow, and that's a memory that I'll hold on to for forever because it was just so funny, him sitting in a chair in my race car teaching me how to drive the night before I was due to race my first race.
How did that work out?
It was pretty funny. He didn't fall or anything, but it was definitely a sight to see.
I can only imagine that. Wow. Krista, it was great having you on tonight, and I feel like I left so much on the table here that we could have covered so much more. I cannot wait to talk to you again. Tell us a little bit about those that have helped you get where you are and the sponsors and what you have planned for next year.
Definitely first and foremost is God. You know, he allows me to do what I love week in and week out and keeps us all safe traveling and at the races. Next would be my parents. They're, you know, my biggest supporters, and they push me to be the best person and driver I can be. Next would be my family and my friends and our crew chief, Junior Jeremiah. My sponsors are BH Homes Construction, Pittman Equipment Repair, Carter's Transmission, Gibbs Brothers Construction, 2018, we're going to have a brand-new doghouse chassis for the Neesmith class. We'll be running Mid-South Big 8 series, hitting up some big money races, and the Ice Bowl. Definitely Street Stock Nationals will be in the books for sure. And hopefully we may run a little asphalt. We're not too for sure on that, though.
Yeah, that's a busy girl right there, and we want you to have a great night, and thank you for coming on the show here. And like I said, we'll definitely have you back on. We're going to follow you. We've seen that you've had quite a few likes and all, and we do appreciate the likes that you've gotten us as well. So hopefully everybody had a great time tonight, and Krista, it was great talking to you. Craig, do you have anything to close on?
I just want to say what a pleasure it is to have you on, and it was it's great to see so many young people coming into the sport and doing so well in it, because like I said when I said something earlier, without the young people, we have no sport. And I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. And we'll, like Chris said, we'll be watching you. We're definitely going to have you on again.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, sir.
Thank you
all so much for allowing me to come on. I enjoyed it. And thanks, everyone, for listening and for all the likes. And I hope y'all have a great night.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow. Craig Moore, I tell you what, hit it out of the ballpark again. I got to thank Michael Huseman for lending that interview there for us, going out there and doing a little scouting and all. We want to thank all the listeners that were listening to that segment. Of course, Krista Travis from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. A lot of big-name drivers out of there. I think Krista Travis is going to be the next big name. Definitely a lot of talent, and she's got her a win already, and I guarantee you racing, you know, she said something, and I think that we hit on it. You know, seat time is everything in a race car, and the more time that these guys have, you know, you ask Kyle Larson, well, what can you take from a dirt car to NASCAR on Sunday? Well, you can't take much other than the most powerful skill of all in racing. That's reflexes, guys, reflexes. I mean, these guys are on point. Somebody who's in a sprint car, they tune themselves to how the car's driving. They drive the car the way the track is. Then they step off into a stock car, and they do the same thing there. So, you know, it really does. The seat time is the most important time that any racer can have. But it was great talking to Krista. We're going to segue on into or shift gears on into the NASCAR roundup with Craig Moore. Craig, we survived Talladega. We survived Talladega.
Well, you all did because we weren't behind the wheel of a car, for crying out loud.
Well, you know, and being a Dale Jr. fan, I had about three heart attacks there. I don't know how in the world Dale Jr. got away with cars wrecking all in front of him. I tell you what, if they had a no-fault rule in racing, I would have just sent, you know, everybody to the back and made them restart there. It was definitely crazy. I think 12 cars finished the show.
Dale Jr. said in his last broadcast up to the booth that he definitely had used all of his good luck. And I kind of laughed. And I kept saying, oh, my God, he got through it again. Holy, he got through it again. If it wasn't for his daddy upstairs looking down on him, he'd have been caught in a few of them. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was definitely an awesome race. I was pretty close on my pick. I did say Ty Dillon. But it ended up being Keselowski, but 5 in a row for that boy. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. We're having some technical issues on the audio side because I had some kids trying to download roadblocks on the computer while we were live here. So, guys, sorry about the audio broadcast. We'll end that immediately, and you'll be able to pick up more of the show on the Blog Talk Network. Give me just a minute here, Craig. Go ahead.
So anyway, the race was phenomenal. When Chris and I were on last week during last week's show, we had said, and CJ, Mr. CJ Sports, if you're there and like to chime in, we had, if you remember, I said that it was going to happen within the first 50 laps of the big one. Caution Flag said it was going to happen in the last 50, and he was absolutely right. But then it was red flag after red flag after red flag. In the last 32 laps, there was three red flags for accidents. And their top contenders were hanging out. Jimmy Johnson, who, big no-no, he started working on the car before he should have. CJ, what's your take on all that?
Yeah.
All right, he must be.
I'm back. I'm back. Sorry about that. And obviously we were having some radio connections problems during the broadcast of the other show, and I'm definitely sorry about that, guys. Seemed to drop the ball there. Thank goodness all this is podcasted, and you'll be listening to the podcast thinking, what in the world is that guy talking about? So, yeah, Dale Jr., he made it. He made it. He definitely made a statement after the race that he was afraid that if he had a wreck, that it would probably be an early out for his career. And so we're glad that he was able to keep his nose clean during the closing laps there at Talladega. Now, Craig, I sent you some stuff earlier this week, and it was the top 20 richest drivers in NASCAR. Did you take a look at that?
I have not. My computer has been giving me fits, but
I wrote them all down, and I'm not surprised by quite a few of them. Of course, the number one richest driver in NASCAR is none other than Dale Earnhardt Jr. Any surprise there? Guy's worth $300 million.
I need a loan.
Yeah, Dale Jr. is my cousin.
Yeah,
so number two on the list is Jeff Gordon. He's at $200 million. Jimmy Johnson's number three on the list, and he's at around $200 million as well. Dale Sr., right at $75 million. That was during the time that he was alive. Kevin Harvick's up there as well in the number five spot. You got Smoke, Mark Martin, Richard Petty, Matt Kenseth, Carl Edwards. Danica Patrick is number 11. Number 12 is Kyle Busch. Greg Biffle's 13th. Cale Yarbrough, 14th. Casey Kane, 15th. Kurt Busch, 16th. Jeff Burton, 17th. It's Rusty Wallace, the number two Miller Lite guy, in the 18th. Ryan Newman and Denny Hamlin, the top 20 richest race car drivers in NASCAR. Yeah, there's something funny about that. You're not seeing any of the newer guys. Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano. Is Joey on there? Joey's not on there, no. So, you know, some of the new guys, they are they not making as much money as some of the older guys that were in racing?
You know what? Probably not, for the sheer fact of they're not proven. They're not getting the multi-million-dollar contracts. And their endorsement deals aren't as big. Their contingency sponsorships aren't as big. So you're not seeing that.
Yeah, and I'm surprised, Ricky Stenhouse is not on the list. And, you know, does that make him gold digger status, that he's with the 11th richest driver in NASCAR? I don't know. I just threw that out there. But I was also surprised not to see Dale Jarrett on that list. I know that Dale Jarrett probably made a good amount of money in racing. Also, Kyle Petty was not on the list. You just kind of wonder if they didn't take advantage of the financial gain that was there at the time.
And that may very well be the case. I mean, because you would think, not so much Kyle Petty. I mean, he's most noted for his one or two wins that he got. No, I think maybe he got six in his career. But, you know, he's more.
Well, a name like Darrell Waltrip, not on the list with a Cale Yarbrough, you know, and a Richard Petty.
Definitely
a lot of this is new money that's flowed into NASCAR. And with the comments of Dale Jr. earlier this year, that new money isn't going to be as much.
Yeah, and I don't think it is. Denny Hamlin is the 21st richest NASCAR driver with really 10% of what Dale Jr. is worth.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Dale Jr. is going to have to write a lot of checks to NASCAR to keep it survived by the rate of what some of these drivers are making right now. It's definitely a new age in NASCAR, but, you know, the money structure is going to change, and, of course, the new guys are going to come along. It's no surprise that Kyle Busch is number 12th on the list. I feel like in the next few years, Kyle Busch will actually work his way up a lot further on that list as he becomes the most marketable driver in NASCAR, which leads us to this. Who is the most marketable driver in NASCAR with the departure of Dale Earnhardt Jr.?
I'm going to have to go with Kyle Larson. Him and I want to say Truex just because of the killer season he's having, but I don't think he's going to have the longevity that Kyle Larson is going to have. Kyle Larson is much younger than him. I'm going to go with Kyle Larson and Keselowski, and I think those are going to be even so much as Truex, where I said about the longevity, but I'm going to have to go with most marketable is going to be definitely Kyle Larson in the next couple of years. I think you're going to see him on a lot more things than we've seen him on in the past.
Yeah, I see Kyle Larson as the man on the rise. But, you know, it's going to be the Kyle and Kyle show there for a little while because I don't believe that Rowdy is going to want to give up the throne so easily. I think as Jimmy Johnson starts closing out his career and we realize just how good Jimmy Johnson was, Kyle Busch has the longevity effect against him. A lot of guys have come in and won a few races in their first few years, and then all of a sudden, you know, out of a 17-year career, 10 years, they were running mid-pack. Jimmy Johnson's kind of been the opposite. He's, you know, from his second year in, he's been, you know, playoff bound or you know, in the chase. And so it's definitely Jimmy Johnson has changed the game, or change the way that these guys are going to race and be looked at as superstars. So, you know, Kyle coming off of two wins this season, you know, he's definitely to have Jimmy Johnson have a two-win season, people would be scratching their heads wondering if he's, you know, if he's losing something or if he's not as good as what he was. And so Kyle's really going to have to keep things in motion once Jimmy starts his decline out of racing.
We're going to touch on this, I'm sure, in a little bit when we talk about this Kansas race is the last race in this portion of the chase. And I don't see Jimmy getting out of this round unless something astronomical happens. And it's not that Jimmy's lost the step. It's just where Jimmy's been at in luck. I think Jimmy's going to go on to win an eighth championship. It's not going to be this year. And I think once he gets that eighth championship, you're going to see him on a whirlwind retirement tour as well. I think he's there to get the eighth championship, and once he gets that, then you're going to see Jimmy Johnson ride off into the sunset, and then we talk who takes over that number 48.
Yeah, you say who's going to replace 48. I don't think Jimmy Johnson and Dale Jr. are going to be so easily replaced at Hendrick Motorsports. These guys have had years of grooming, and now all of a sudden the pressure is on Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, and William Byron to carry such a heavy load. To be honest with you, if I was either one of those guys, I'd be scared to death right now.
Oh, I wouldn't want to be the flag bearer for Hendrick Motorsports. Not after Jimmy hangs it up. Because like you said, you got Chase and you got Alex Bowman. I mean, who's going to be really there? Who are they going to look to? It's going to be the veterans of the team. Obviously, it's going to be Chase Elliott. I think after that, I think after Jimmy retires, you're going to see Hendrick go through a slump for a year or two. Because although Jeff, Jimmy, and Dale will be ears for these guys, and they'll have them in their ear. They won't be out on the track with them.
Yeah,
so,
you know, not to cut you off, but you brought up an interesting point there, Craig, and I did read an article not too long ago that Jeff Gordon had not signed his commentator contract with the network after 2018 because he was unsure of what position he may have at Hendrick Motorsports, which brings up a great question. Is Hendrick going to step aside as Jimmy Johnson starts getting older and maybe turn the reins over to Jeff Gordon, who's, you know, has stock within Hendrick Motorsports?
That could, and I heard that too. And I was a little shocked at that. Because Jeff's segment on TV is 4 months, if that. And granted, that 4 months is 4 months. Running a race team, running an empire like Hendrick Motorsports is 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But I was a little shocked at that, and I think that is a definite possibility that Hendrick's going to step aside in 2019 or take a lesser role at Hendrick and step back and let Jeff run the day-to-day operations of Hendrick Motorsports. There's nobody that, I mean, with him and Jimmy running, if hypothetically they were to do that, I don't really see anybody being able to stop that. I mean, who's going to take over Penske when the captain sits down?
Well, you know, we've talked about this before. I think that Penske is more of a structured world company. Penske is, you know, of course, a freight line. They're involved in many, many different areas outside of racing. So, you know, Penske is structured as a main business. They have a CEO. You know, I believe Penske has made sure that he's Penske Racing will continue on even if the captain is unable to. And that's where I kind of think Hendrick Motorsports is leaning towards too, and the possibility of Jeff Gordon coming in and running the operation side of it is definitely feasible. And it's almost as if, you know, that would open the door for Junior Motorsports to maybe come in and be the big time Hendrick, basically the satellite team. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely would not want to be one of these young guys because, you know, a lot of people, you know, all the merchandising that Dale Jr. made from selling, you know, his sales, merchandising sales, all of Gordon's merchandising sales, the fan base is going to be broke up at the end of the year. Dale Jr. said it best. A lot of these guys are going to earn new fans.
Yes.
But Jr. knows as well that the whole piece of the pie, it's not going to one certain place anymore. This piece of the pie is going to be broke up, and drivers are going to have new fans based off the fact that Dale Jr. is retiring.
And I think you're going to see that, like you just said, and Jr. said it. Dale Jr. fans, they're going to migrate to Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, good friend of mine and a big supporter of ours at More Team Music. Randy Clanker, he and I were talking about this earlier this year. And we were like, he was like, I don't know. He says, depending on who they put in a car, he says, I may root for them or I may root, totally switch over to like Chase Elliott. So when you saying migrate, I mean, that made me remember that conversation that we had. And,
yeah,
you know, he and I have talked about that, but, you know, since then.
And here's the interesting part that I believe is true, Craig. You won't have these fans, the mass fans from Dale Jr. going to, say, a Matt Kenseth or a Kyle Busch. You've already made your mind up on these guys. What you're going to have is the new talent, these fresh young guys. They're going to be the ones that these fans turn to and say, hey, you know, you're my guy now. Is that going to build up a false expectation of some of these drivers? Probably not. Probably not for the fans either. I think then it kind of evens the playing field back out, and drivers can maybe start becoming more noticeable outside of the presence of Dale Jr. What do you think about that, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. I think that Dale Jr. Casts a big shadow. And, you know, name a NASCAR driver. If you say to somebody who's a casual NASCAR fan, who is the driver you think of when you think NASCAR? You're going to get a couple of answers. You're going to get Dale Earnhardt. You're going to get Richard Petty, Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Jr. Those five.
Yeah, those are the top five. That's the top five for the highest earners, too, there, you know.
You know what? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, there you go. On the money. But, you are on the money.
Well, those are the people that you think. Now, in my house, I'm a Dale Jr. fan. My boy is a Matt Kenseth fan. You know, he's got to find a new driver, too, in 4 weeks.
Well, you know, and we'll shift gears into this one. I have sources that say Matt Kenseth is very interested in joining a Front Row Motorsports team. I don't know if, you know, how far the deal goes, but, you know, to think that Kenseth is looking
uh-huh.
at some of these smaller teams. You see. Is that Mr. CJ Sports?
You did not hear from that man for almost an hour.
And here soon, Carlos Edwards' name is going to be dropped. You watch. I'm telling y'all.
Wait, say that again.
I said, and here soon, Carlos Edwards' name is going to be in this conversation. I'm telling y'all. Now,
news just in, Carl Edwards buys some oceanfront property in Arizona. The house beside Kenny Chesney and Jimmy Buffett. Carl Edwards is not coming back to racing, guys. He is toes in the sand.
I ain't saying it's getting behind the wheel, but I have a feeling Kenseth and Edwards, there's more to Matt Kenseth just driving somewhere else, and Edwards is going to be back in the sport. I'm not saying behind the wheel.
Yeah, and Edwards is in that top 20 list there of guys with the most money in NASCAR. And so you wonder at what point in time does that money kind of start dwindling down. And these guys have got to think about investments. And,
hey.
You know, it sounds like this could be coming true. And Mr. CJ
hey.
Sports is something
Chris,
that we've talked about since February.
Chris, that money, the only time that money's going to dwindle down is when you write that check to be part owner of a team in NASCAR.
the old Felix Sabatis. You know how to make a million in NASCAR? You got to spend a billion. Seems to be the case. Yeah, with Casey Kane going to the 95 car, the Levine Racing, I think that kind of opened some eyes. But now we've seen this before. We've watched Kurt Busch go to Harry Scott. We've watched Clint Bowyer go to Harry Scott. We watched the demise of both of these drivers while they were behind the wheel of a car that was not competitive. Are they mentally ready for something like that, or is this new satellite program really working? Are they feeding too much off of what TRD's got going here? Because I just didn't know at what point in time these teams become superpower teams. Because obviously Furniture Row has become a superpower team. That team is no different than Bob Jenkins' Front Row Motorsports. And I think that maybe there's something brewing in Bob's head that says, hey, if Barney can do it, I can do it too.
If you're asking me, I think you're getting too in-depth into the power team. I think, and I've been saying this the whole time. I said it's been way too quiet. I don't even know if I'm going to see Kenseth behind the wheel next year. But I think there's more to this than just Kenseth going over to Front Row. I think they're going to partner up. This is what I've been saying all year. I wouldn't be surprised. They're both past their prime. They're both at that age. There's just something that tells me that those two are going to reunite. They got along when they was over at Roush Fenway, and something tells me it's not about super team, it's not about none. It's about an opportunity for them to create a super team, but from the owner's side, maybe Kenseth drives a year or two, and while this organization gets under, you know, gets their feet underneath them. But I'm telling you, there was something in my gut. Just like Alex Bowman ended up in the car that he ended up, and the other I gotta keep the driver from my head.
My question is, where does Biffle fit in all this? Because Biffle's sitting there, he's not driving right now. He's on the top 20 list. You know, where does Biffle sit in all this? And is it true? Could it be, you know, obvious that Richard Childress Racing is going to Dodge in 2019? And I don't mean to make everybody's phones drop out of their hands, but guys, this could be something that's true.
I think Biffle took himself out of the equation when he was having his wife video recorded.
Jokes.
What's your thought on this, Craig?
Well, Craig doesn't do his research too much on NASCAR, but, you know, we'll call it the NASCAR Roundup. Ooh, Craig? Hold on.
Okay.
That was Craig.
That's what you got.
Hey, listen, just like your kids were downloading stuff that they shouldn't have or shouldn't have been at the proper time, my computer decides it doesn't want to work at times, like now. I don't know. I was kind of shocked when I seen Biffle not coming back for 2017. I don't see him getting a ride for next year. I really don't. I mean, I think he's pretty much done. It's interesting with Kenseth going over to the Front Row team. And yes, Front Row 5 years ago, 6 years ago, they were an also-ran team. They might as well have just started in park. And now, like you just said, Chris, 10 minutes ago, they're a powerhouse. And I think a lot of that has to do with the help they're getting from TRD. When you hear in interviews, when you hear Kyle Busch say, we need to figure out what they're doing over at Furniture Row and what Truex is doing, you know that they're on to something that the other teams are lacking with the same factory support.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of this plays into crew chief guys, and Cole Pearn is the next Chad Knaus. We've seen it throughout the generations. We watched Suitcase Jake. We've seen Don Inman. We watched Larry McReynolds work his magic, and it seems like each generation brings this super crew chief that really understands the next concept of technology, and that gives a competitive advantage in-house to these drivers. We've seen it with Chad Knaus. I mean, Jimmy Johnson, no matter what they say, the pairing of Chad Knaus and Jimmy Johnson led to both of them in the success that they have today. Jimmy Johnson didn't have the skill of a race car driver that most had. He was from motorcycles and had raced trucks. And so being knowledgeable of the actual car, Chad Knaus made it easy for him. He said, look, you don't know much about this car. I'm going to tell you what the feedback I want. And you tell me, by using this type of grammar, this structure, you tell me what the car's doing, and I'm going to fix it from there. And I think Cole Pearn has that special gift, too, where, you know, Truex has raced for a lot of race teams. We've never seen the power that he's had over the last couple of years. And like I said, I'll say it over and over again, I think Cole Pearn has a lot to do with that. And if you don't have a guy like Cole Pearn at Furniture Row Racing, at Front Row Racing, you're not going to be able to tally up the results. Eric Jones was a very talented car, but I felt like through most of this year, Cole Pearn was putting together two race cars to race every weekend, and maybe in a way it caused a distraction to the point to where Barney Visor said, you know, hey, we don't have the funding for this car. I'm running thin on resources. I'm going to cut this car out, and we're going to focus back on the 78 because that's the bread and butter.
No, you're absolutely right. And getting back to Chad Knaus and Jimmy Johnson, Johnson would not have been a success, and you alluded to this, or as big of a success if it wasn't for somebody like Chad Knaus. Pair Jimmy Johnson with somebody else, and he's going to have a championship or two, not seven.
Yeah, that's a, you know, it is the perfect pairing of such, and that's probably what made Earnhardt's career so awesome, is the fact that Earnhardt didn't have, you know, one certain crew chief. He had a lot of crew chiefs, and he made it work with a lot of them, but definitely Earnhardt was a different kind of beast in his own time. So you guys have looked at the odds for this week in Vegas. Tell, as we get ready to close the show out, tell us about this week at Kansas, Craig.
Well, Truex is favored 5-2, I believe. I'm not looking at the stat. I'm just going off of memory. But he's in that list. He's in the top two spots every week, no doubt. Vegas knows something. Talladega was a wild card. I definitely, you know, he's favored to win, but I said it earlier, I'm going with Joey Logano, to pull the upset this weekend at Kansas, and throw a monkey wrench in, and I don't see Double J in the round of eight.
Wow. Go ahead. Mr. CJ Sports, you got your picks ready?
No Jimmy Johnson in the round of eight?
I know, right?
Get out of here. Hey, I'm feeling you, though. I don't know if I'm seeing Jimmy Johnson in my round of eight as well, because I think Kyle Busch recovers from last week, finds himself back in the top eight with the win this weekend.
Well, you know, I think I played with y'all a little bit too hard. I told you I was going to pick Daniel Suarez for this week, and I promise you, Suarez may be one to watch.
No,
but, you know, the 1.5-mile tracks, Ganassi has been on a roll. I'm going to have to go with Kyle Larson here, and I'm going to back up what Craig says, and bye-bye, JJ.
I mean, it's funny. I'm looking back at last year's show on mine when I had Mr. Bill Meyer on, and he and I were going back and forth about Jimmy. And, you know, he proved us both wrong, but I don't see him proving us wrong this year. I just don't know.
Yeah, they're behind the ball. I think that Jimmy knew at Talladega that that could be detrimental. But, you know, I mean, you're talking about a guy who can win at any track he goes to at any given weekend. I think Kyle Larson's going to be the one that wins. I'm just not sure that you can't count Jimmy Johnson out of the top five. And if he's in the top five and some other guys have a bad day, you're looking at, it's one thing to have one bad race in the round. If you have two bad races, you're out. And how many of these guys in the top eight are going to have a bad race and find themselves outside the box?
You can't have bad races. Not in this, or I don't care. Not in this format. I mean, you can have a good stage race. You can have a good race as in stages, but if you wreck in the last stage, that's, those first two stages were all for naught. So,
yeah, Mike Perricone says Martin Truex wins the race, and Kyle Busch wins. Wait a minute. Wins Kansas. Kyle Busch wins. Oh, the championship in JJ. That's the stats, Mr. Stats. That's his predictions for this week. We want to thank Mike Perricone, of course, for listening to the show. Listen to his show tomorrow night, Hot Laps with Stats. He'll have a couple of great guests on and some big news coming out of that show as well. We filled our hour, guys, as always. It's the hour goes fast. We want to apologize once again to anybody that was dealing with the technical difficulties on our audio live feed. Great news, that audio live feed is just a overlap of this, and most of the time, if you'll go back and listen to it on the Blog Talk Radio Network podcast, you'll find that it's a lot clearer there. So we'll work on that issue, And like I said, it was one of those situations where we were running through the computer, and the kid said, oh, there's roadblocks, and I had no idea that they were trying to download something. So it had interfered with the feed, and guys, I'm very sorry about that. But we want to thank y'all for listening to Racing with Big Sweat for this Thursday night episode. We'll be looking forward to next week's show. And we're closing in on the holiday season, and we'll be taking a break away for a little while. So, guys, anything to close with there before we say goodnight?
I want to throw a couple things out there real quick. Tomorrow night on Hot Laps and Stats, you got Eddie Connie Partridge, the owner of both Riverhead Raceway and the number 6 Welland Modified 4 car that Ryan Preece drove this year. Who won the Xfinity Series race and has had a great couple showings in the Xfinity Series this year. And also, who's the other guest? Frank Dumichick? I jacked that up. Super Pro Truck Driver. Also, got to thank Fit for Life, I-95 Sports Network, Mile High Radio. Check us out on Twitter, at 110 Nation. Once again, thanks for all the love for our earlier guests and all her fans and friends and family that have gone and liked our fan page. Make sure that you guys go like us if you're not. And we'll creep it up on 1,500. I think we're right about 20 likes away. So if you've not gone over there and liked us, give us a like. If you have, share with everybody's got. Everybody's got at least one sports friend on their Facebook page. Share it with them. Send them our direction. I promise we won't steer them wrong. But check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also check out our site, www.110nationsports.com.
Yeah, Craig?
I just want to thank Chris, you sent analytics earlier today, so I want to thank the 11 people that listen in Gloversville, New York. My home area. And I want to give a shout-out real quick to Stuart Friesen. He drives the Hallmark truck in the Camping World Truck Series. He had a good race at Talladega. He started 30, led for a little while. And that's huge, and I expect big things out of him next year in the Truck Series. I really do. I think he'll contend next year. But real quick, I want to give a shout-out to everybody that comes out to my DJ gigs in my area. Morching Music Entertainment and Karaoke. The last 4 years has been a hell of a ride, and we have one of our local tracks actually still running here. They got two more weeks, and they don't usually run this late in the year, but Glen Ridge Motorsports Park promoters Mike Perillo and Ray Sheriffin, they're still running over there at Glen Ridge, and that's just awesome. Here it is, the end of October pretty much, and we just have heavy frost, no snow yet, and they're still running races, and people are still showing up. So, congrats to them.
Yeah, nice to know that Dirt Track Racing is alive and well up in the New York area. Of course, guys, next week is the Fall Classic, 23rd Annual Fall Classic at Wydon Motorsports Park. It's the end of the year blast. Come on out. Enjoy some great Racing Life Super Late Models there. I think it's $15,000 to win Super Late Model Race. 23rd annual event. I mean, you know, this thing's been going on quite a while. We get some of the best named drivers. Last year we had Bloomquist there. Bloomquist almost won the race. One of those Penske shocks broke with about 3 laps to go and got outrun. But I tell you what, it was a magnificent finish. And if you'll come out this year, you're going to see it all over again. So make sure you're down, if you're anywhere in the area, come down to Why Not Mississippi, right outside Meridian, and attend the 23rd annual Coors Light Fall Classic here at Why Not Motorsports Park. Race fans, I want to thank y'all for listening to Racing with Big Sweat. We'll be back on the air next Thursday night, and make sure that y'all support your local tracks, and we'll talk to y'all very soon. Bye.